Okay, here we go. Purim is the Yom Tov of Nes Nistar. That is the basic theme and essence of the whole nature of Purim, and that's what we're going to talk about today. First, let's get some definitions out of the way. What exactly is a Nes Nistar versus a Nes Nigla? A Nes Nigla is where Hashem intervenes on behalf of Klal Yisrael, and He changes the laws of nature. He changes the laws of nature. That's a Nes Nigla. The Nes is Galui. It's revealed. It's open. You can stare at it. You can almost see Hashem. You're staring at Hashem. Nes Nigla. A Nes Nistar is where Hashem intervenes on behalf of Klal Yisrael in a way which does not break the laws of nature. The Hashem's intervention is hidden by the natural world. It's hidden behind the laws of nature. That is a Nes Nistar. The whole theme of Purim is Nes Nistar. There is not one supernatural event in the Megillah. The entire Megillah is full of incidents and events that coincidentally, quote unquote, fit together to save Klal Yisrael. That's Nes Nistar. This is why, Pashut Pshat, the Rishonim say, Hashem's name is not found in the Megillah. The Rishonim say this, the second short sheet, verse number 2. That's why Hashem's name is not found in the Megillah. That's the whole point of the Megillah. That even when you don't see Hashem in an overt, obvious, frontal way, Hashem is still there. You hear? That's exactly the point of the Megillah. That, where is Hashem in the Megillah? He's in between the lines. That is the basic yisod of Purim being the Yom Tov of Nes Nistar. Megillas Esther, the name Megillas Esther means Megale Seser. Reveal that which is hidden. That's what the word. So that's also the Rishonim. It's on the same sheet. The Rishonim say that Megillas Esther, Megala, that which is hidden. We're revealing Hashem hidden behind the natural world. Okay. What we're going to do today is develop many ideas that flow out of that basic yisod that Purim is the Yom Tov of Nes Nistar. And I want to do this by developing the background of the story of Purim. Purim is the story of Bnei Yisrael fighting Amalek. So I want to develop the background of Bnei Yisrael fighting Amalek in the Chumash. And we'll see that idea works as the backdrop for the whole Purim story, and that backdrop of Bnei Yisrael and Amalek in the Chumash fits perfectly into this whole theme of Purim being the Yom Tov of Nes Nistar. Okay? So now let's begin. Amalek versus Bnei Yisrael in the Chumash. What exactly is the nature of the fight? How do we view the struggle of Amalek and Bnei Yisrael? So let's see. Source number one. What is Amalek? What's Amalek? Source number one. Asher karcha bazerach. They happened upon you. They happened upon you. The Mefarshim say this is the essence of Amalek. Mikra, everything is by chance. They happened upon you. This is the essence of Amalek. The Malbim here and the Hamakdavar here and the Mitziv in Dvarim explain that's Amalek's essence. Amalek's essence is Hashem is nowhere. Everything is nature. Everything's coincidence. Everything's nature. Hashem is nowhere. Everything's Mikra. The Malbim says the entire world saw. The entire world saw or heard about the Nes Nigla in Mitzrayim, and Amalek says, "No, we're not going to buy it." Let's read what he says. The double underlined part: Shekol Hanisim Heimai Salahat B'Chochmas Moshe. All of the miracles in Mitzrayim, which the whole world's talking about, was black magic. It was sleight of hand. It wasn't miraculous. We don't believe in miracles. Hashem is nowhere. That is the essence of Amalek. Amalek believes everything's mikra. Everything's nature. Hashem is nowhere. Everything's coincidence. Hashem is nowhere. And Moshe Feinstein explains in the Darash Moshe, source 2a, by the arrow, that is exactly why Amalek has to be destroyed and wiped out. Why? Because if you can deny Hashem in the face of Nes Nigla, you have no hope. If you can stare Hashem in the face, there's a Nes Nigla right in front of you, and still deny Hashem, you have no hope. You got to be killed. That's what he says. He says, "Eino mo'il v'hemach nesim kluyim." Yim Kol Mina Olam. If an Eis Nigla is not going to help, what is it? Nothing's going to help. So they have to be killed. That's Rav Moshe's pshat in source 2a. Now, when Bnei Yisrael fought Amalek in the Midbar, Moshe sends Yehoshua. Oh. Now, it's interesting to fight. Moshe davens, Yeshua fights. Moshe did the fighting in the Midbar. Moshe fought Sichon. Moshe fought Og. Why is Moshe sending Yehoshua? This is a very interesting point. Shot in the Chumash. Why is Moshe sending Yehoshua to fight? So the Malbim and the Netziv say exactly the same words, and they say as follows. They say, Moshe's Midah was Nes Nigla. Yehoshua's Midah, I'll explain all this in a minute. Yehoshua's Midah was Nes Nister. More B'derech HaTeva. And Moshe wanted to fight Amalek B'dafka B'derech Nes Nister. And therefore Moshe sends Yehoshua. That's what he says. Ratza Moshe L'haros L'Yisrael Koach Hashkachas Hashem Gambli Nes Nigla. Alkein Sider HaMechamazu B'derech HaTeva. Aye, and Moshe wasn't a Teva type person. He was more Nes Nigla. Alkein Sives Yehoshua. That's what they say. Now let's explain what this means. Moshe's entire midah was Nes Nigla. Moshe led Bnei Israel. Moshe brought the matos. Moshe brought Bias Yamsuf. Moshe brought the mun. Moshe led Bnei Israel in the midbar. Bnei Israel's life at the midbar was kol kulo Nes Nigla, except for this one exception, which we'll get to. Nes Nigla. Moshe's the leader. What's the strongest proof that Moshe was Mr. Nes Nigla? No. Better, more specific. Har Sinai, 40 days. He didn't need 40 days. Moshe becomes almost like a Malach. That's the Lashon HaRambam. The Lashon HaRambam is, Moshe was Niskadesh Kimalach. Moshe was almost like a Malach. That's Nes Nigla. Moshe's whole life was Nes Nigla. Oh. And that's why it makes sense that Moshe led us in the Midbar, because Midbar was all Nes Nigla. Yehoshua was Nes Nister. Yehoshua led us into Eretz Yisrael. And let me explain this. If you compare the Midbar to Eretz Yisrael, which is a more Nes Nigla type existence? The Midbar for sure. In the Midbar, we lived with the Shechina, the Anan. Our clothes didn't get worn out. Our food came from heaven. Our water came with us in the earth. Nes Nigla, Nigla, Nigla. Eretz Yisrael, we have to plant things. We have to fight. Well, I'll explain that more in a minute about the fighting. And we have to live a more ordinary life. So relative to the Midbar, Eretz Yisrael is a much more Nes Nister type place. And Yehoshua led us into Eretz Yisrael. That was Yehoshua's Midah. Now, Eretz Yisrael is not devoid of Nes Nigla. We have Nes Nigla in Eretz Yisrael. A remnant. Where is the primary remnant of Nes Nigla in Eretz Yisrael? In the Beit HaMikdash. There were Nes Nigla that happened in the Beit HaMikdash every day of the year. So you have a Nes Nigla in the Beit HaMikdash, but overall, if you compare the Midbar to Eretz Yisrael, the Midbar is a much higher spiritual level. Now it's not, now I guess what now is different, but back then, this is exactly the chait of the Miraglim. This is the standard shot that Sfas Emes says. What were the Miraglim thinking? The Miraglim were thinking, hey, we're in the Midbar now. We're learning Torah the whole day. We have no worries about Parnassa. Who wants to go to Eretz Yisrael? Bnei Yisrael is not ready. That's what the Maralim felt. Bnei Yisrael aren't ready to enter a life of Teva and Nes Nister in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore they said, we can't go in yet. Oh. Now, even in Eretz Yisrael, when you're working with Nes Nister, so there's a general Yisod that whenever Hashem governs us with Nes Nister, by the way, everything I'm saying now is like a background for this piece. I'm explaining Yehoshua in a second. Whenever Hashem governs us with Nes Nister, He always begins with a Nes Nigla. Why? It is as follows. Hashem wants us to believe in Him, even when it's B'derech HaTeva. So Hashem first trains us, this action comes from me, Nes Nigla. And then we have Emunah that it comes from Hashem even when it's not B'derech Nes Nigla. For example, food. Hashem wants us to believe, you plant, you grow, where does the food come from? Hashem. What did Hashem do? 40 years in the Midbar, gives us the man. Neis Nigla. Bnei Israel were trained, food comes from Hashem. And then you get to Eretz Yisrael, living more of a Derech HaTeva, you have to maintain your emunah that it's all coming from Hashem. Fighting a war. Wars, 99% of the time, are Neis Nister. 99% of the wars are Neis Nister. You're fighting guns, Uzis, machetes, you're fighting. The wars in Eretz Yisrael were Neis Nister. Hashem wants us to believe that when we're fighting in Eretz Yisrael, B'derech Neis Nister, it's coming from Him. What does Hashem do? The first war in Eretz Yisrael, Yericho, Neis Nigla. Walk around seven times, blow the trumpets, the walls fall down. Hashem is saying, I fight wars for you. I'm showing you Neis Nigla. Now, you're on your own the rest of the way. Have emunah in me that I'm still helping you. Oh. So I just explained the breakdown from the Midbar, which was Kol Kulo Neis Nigla, to Eretz Yisrael, which was primarily Neis Nister, with a dose of Neis Nigla, but primarily Neis Nister. So the Mitziv says it. Yehoshua's Mida was Neis Nister. He led us into Eretz Yisrael. Moshe's Mida is Neis Nigla. We're fighting Amalek. Melchemes Amalek in the Midbar was a Neis Nister. Melchemes Amalek in the Midbar was a Neis Nister. It was a miracle that Hashem performed within the rules of nature. And therefore, Hashem, Moshe says to Yeshua, you have to fight Amalek. This is your Mita. This is your war. Neis Nister. Now let me explain this just for a second. People often get confused about Melchemes Amalek. Oh, Melchemes Amalek is a Neis Nigla. Moshe's hands up, down. Moshe's hands are up. We win. Down, we lose. That's confusion. That's not true. It's still a Neis Nister. Let me explain. Neis Nister means that the action that's being done can possibly be explained within the rules of nature. When Bnei Israel fought Amalek in the Midbar, they were fighting with knives and guns and machetes and Uzis. They were fighting. So true, when Moshe's hands were up, the Mishnah says, we won. Why? We focused on Hashem. When we focused on Hashem, then Hashem helps and we win the war. But we're still fighting. Is that clear? We're still fighting. It was a classic Neis Nister. Moshe's hands were down. We think we're fighting ourselves. We lose. Moshe's up. We daven, Hashem, you're helping us. We're fighting. We win the war. What would a Neis Nigla have been in Melchemes Amalek? Moshe's hands are up. Lightning comes down and kills all Amalek. That would have been a Neis Nigla. Moshe's hands are up. A Mabul comes and wipes out all the Amalek people. That's a Neis Nigla. That's not what happened. We were fighting. Melchemes Amalek in the Midbar was a Neis Nister. Now, what's very striking is it was the first Neis Nister in the history of Hashem governing Klal Yisrael as a nation. That's very striking. Bnei Yisrael in Mitzrayim, we're becoming a nation. The Makos, Neis Nigla. Kriyas Yamsuf, Neis Nigla. The Mun, Neis Nigla. Mei Mara, Chazal say, was a bitter tree in bitter waters, Neis Nigla. Moshe hits the rock, water comes out, Neis Nigla. Neis Nigla, 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 Nigla. Suddenly, Melchemes Amalek, Dafka Neis Nister, you go Yehoshua, you're Mr. Neis, you have to go Yehoshua. It's very striking. This is the first Neis Nister that Klal Yisrael experiences on a national level. The first time Hashem governs us, B'derech Neis Nister, is Melchemes Amalek. Why? So I think the pshat is, I'm just fleshing out what the Netziv says, this next point is my own slight addition, I guess you call it a chiddush, I don't say chiddushim almost ever. I bounce this idea off Rav Lev, I bounce it off Rav Lander, and a few other rabbanim, Rav Lev Shlita, Rav Lander Shlita, and our brothers wise sweet, and they thought it made sense. It goes as follows. The pshat as follows. Hashem clearly chooses to fight Amalek bidafka b'derech neis nister. That's what's happening. Hashem's going out of his way to fight Amalek bidafka b'derech neis nister. Why? I think the answer is as follows. Amalek's midah is everything's mikra, Hashem is nowhere. When Hashem fights Amalek, He wants to teach Klal Yisrael, listen, Amalek Shita is wrong, it's dead wrong. You go to the opposite extreme. Amalek believes everything's nature, Hashem is nowhere. I'm going to show Amalek, nothing's nature, Hashem is everywhere. Even when you don't see me, I'm still there. Even when you don't see me, I'm still there. The best way to completely refute and completely eradicate Amalek's mistaken approach to the world is go to the opposite extreme. Amalek believes even when there's a nation Israel, I'm not there. Even when no one sees me, I'm still there. The opposite extreme. Hashem bedastifies Amalek bederech nesnis. And now again, I want to explain. The fact that Hashem fights Amalek bederech nesnister is a fact. I'm explaining like the hashkafic reason behind it, which I think makes a lot of sense. But that's happened. That's a fact. That's what happened in the Midbar, and that's we'll see what happens in the Megillah story. There's one last little vort. When Moshe tells Yeshua to go fight Amalek, Moshe says, "Say, go out, fight Amalek." Where was he going? Where was he leaving from? So the Mefarshim discuss it. The Medrash says, "Say mitachas he'anan, go out from under the anan." I think that Medrash means exactly this Netziv. What is the anan? What's the anan? Neis Nigla, Hashem's Shechina. Hashem Moshe saying, "Listen, Yeshua, leave the Enei HaKavod. Leave the world of Neis Nigla. Get out there and fight them at Derech Neis Nister." I think that's a good shot in the Medrash. Say means leave from under the anan, meaning leave Neis Nigla, enter Neis Nister, go kill Amalek. Okay. So Amalek is Mikra, and Hashem fights Amalek Bedaska Bederech Neis Nister. Amalek believes everything's Mikra. Hashem shows them nothing's Mikra. Let's now enter the Megillah. Haman is from Amalek. The Makoros indicates that Haman, as Amalek, had exactly this midah of everything is what? Everything is Mikra. Let's read. Source 4 is the Medrash Rabbah and Esther. Mordechai sends Esther a message through Hatha and says, "Esther, the enemy's against us. They're trying to kill us." And Moshe tells Esther, "Everything asher karahu." That's the verb that... Did I say Moshe? Mordechai. Making sure that I'm awake here. Mordechai sends a message, "Everything which happened to us, asher karahu." Let's read the Medrash. Amalei lahasach, "Lech amorla, ben bino shel karahu ba'aleinu." Why does Mordechai use that particular verb? Mordechai is hinting, "Esther, you should know the enemy, Esther. This is Amalek's great-great-grandson. Mr. Mikre is against us." Mordechai is identifying the enemy. Who's the enemy? Mr. Mikre. It's the same old Amalek. You got that word? That's the Medrash. That's the Gemara. It's a Medrash Rabbah. That's why Mordechai uses that phrase, karahu. He's identifying this is the essence of Haman. Haman is Mr. Mikra. He's the great-great-grandson of Mr. Mikra. We're up against him again. We find this to be Haman's midah elsewhere in the Megillah. Source 4b, Perek Vav in the Megillah, Haman has a particularly rough day. When Perek Vav begins, Haman's on his way over to kill, have Mordechai be killed. He's at the peak of his power. This we'll discuss next week. The peak of his power, second only to the king, about to have Mordechai be murdered, be killed, and at that moment, the king says, "Take Mordechai to the streets." Mordechai kicks him and steps on him and stomps on him, and Haman's embarrassed. Haman has garbage thrown on his head, the Medrash says. His daughter thought he was Mordechai, threw his garbage on his head. Then his daughter saw it was Haman, and she committed suicide. He gets home, and he's having a rough day, and he's talking to his family, and he tells his family, "Vayisaper Haman Lazarus Ishto, Eis Kol Asher Karahu." Haman uses that verb as well. The Mefarshim say, exactly, that's Haman. What a rough day, what bad luck I'm having. The possibility that maybe Hashem was sending a message, "You know, Haman, you're about to murder a tzaddik. Maybe you should back out on your plans," didn't cross his mind. Karahu, it's all chance. He uses the same verb. This is who Haman was. Source 4a, and this is a major yesod now in the whole Megillah. Haman is making the most important decision of his life. He's deciding when to kill the Jews, which day. So this is a big plan. There's a lot of Jews out there. Which day to kill the Jews? How does Haman decide when to kill the Jews? He throws the dice. He throws the dice. The ultimate expression of mikriyut. He's making a crucially important decision. There might be 1,000 factors when to kill them. The winter, the spring, they talk about it right now, whatever. America now is going to kill out part of Amalek now in Iraq, and they're deciding when to go in the winter. The summer's too hot to go. Okay, they're deciding a million factors when to go. How does he decide? Throws the dice. He feel poor. That's Amalek. The most important decision in his life, and he throws the dice. And Taka, we'll see next week. Haman drew the lots in Nisan.
When did Haman want the lots to come out? What day did he want the lots to come out? Obviously, he wanted them to come out as soon as possible. He wanted to kill the Jews as soon as possible.
He wanted the next day. He wanted to kill us immediately. Of course he wanted to kill us immediately. It works out that the lots came out 11 months later. Unbelievable. What did Hashem do? We'll see next week. Hashem worked out the lots that they came out 11 months later, the latest possible date. That was part of the Nes Nistar. Hashem wanted us to have time to defend ourselves, to do tshuva. So Hashem took, this is very significant, Hashem took the lots that Mr. Amalek was throwing the dice to take a total lottery when to kill the Jews, and Hashem took those lots and used them against Mr. Amalek and put Nes Nistar into the lots to be 11 months later. That's why Purim's called Purim, because the whole Yom Tov revolves around the lots. Amalek thinks it's all Mikra. Hashem says, I'll show you, even you're at the height of your Mikriyut, I'm going to use your Mikriyut against you. Now, there's an issue about this, the last 2 minutes of the Shir, that the poor of Haman was throwing the dice. There's an issue which has to be addressed. And I discussed this with Rav Adari Shlita and Rav Lev Shlita both, and they both said the same thing. You see, there's a medrash which superficially sounds like it's against what we've been saying till now. There's a medrash that sounds like that when Haman was drawing the lots, what happened? Oh, Nisan? Oh, that's a bad month, because that's when the Jews left Mitzrayim. Iyar, you aware of that medrash? Haman, month by month, oh, Adar, he's happy with. Why is he happy with Adar? Because Moshe died in Adar. But what he didn't know, the Moshe was born in Adar. So on a superficial level, that medrash seems to indicate that Haman wasn't Stam throwing the dice. Haman had very careful calculations to figure out when to kill the Jews. That's what it sounds like on a superficial level. But I don't think that's the pshat, and neither do Rav Adari or Rav Lev. And they explain as follows. Number one, let's go number one. The three approaches here, all of which are possible. Number one, if you read the Medrash, one could easily read the Medrash to mean Haman threw the dice. And then after the dice came up one way or the other, goes, oh yeah, Nisan's a bad month. Yeah, Nisan's a bad. The dice say, don't attack and don't kill a Nisan. Yeah, Nisan is a schus for Klal Yisrael. Not that Haman was deciding based on the schus and not the schus. He was drawing lots. He threw the dice. Okay, let's say Nisan here. Oh, let's say 7 or 11 wins. You know, he's waiting for 7 or 11. Nisan, ooh, snake eyes. Whoa, that's a bad month. And he explains why Nisan's a bad month. That's what happened with Haman. That's shot number one. That the medrash is explaining Haman's post-poor description. Like, I'm happy. Like, you know, oh, you're good. I'm happy. Like, he's saying, he throws the dice. Oh, I'm happy that the dice came up against Nisan because Nisan's a lucky month for the Jews. Something like that. That's shot number one, which they both accepted as a reasonable shot.
But Rav Lev went further and gave several other possibilities as well. Rav Lev, as we'll get to in a few minutes, Rav Lev definitely assumes that the Midah of Amalek is everything's Mikra, and he certainly thinks we should understand this Medrash along those lines as well. So far we've given one shot. Another shot Rav Lev gave was that Haman was saying these things not for his own sake, but really for Ahasuerus's sake. See, Rav Lev has a whole approach that Haman, Amalek, they're basically atheists. Ahasuerus was an Oved Avodah Zarah. He believed in the spiritual powers. The Gemara talks about that Ahasuerus was afraid of the Nebuah, of the Nebuah of the Shivim Shanim, and that's why he threw his party, because he thought the Nebuah of the 7 years of Galus was really up. So Ahasuerus believed in these things. The Gemara says that Ahasuerus was worried about if Bnei Israel had any zechuyos, and there's a whole discussion between Ahasuerus and Haman about the zechuyos of Bnei Israel. Will Hashem protect them or not? So Haman is saying, he's explaining, how am I going to explain this to Ahasuerus that I chose this day, this month of Adar? So when he went through month by month, he wasn't saying his own personal views. His view is everything's mikriyut, we'll just go by what the dice say. But he was also explaining what he would say to Ahasuerus, and that's the meaning of the Medrash, that Haman's using calculations for each month. A third shot Rav Leff gave was that the Maral says that sometimes in the Midrashim, the Medrash will describe what the Tsar of a Rasha is saying or doing, sort of putting words in the Rasha's mouth. The Tsar has a Havana. Every Rasha is governed by a certain Tsar. So the Medrash is explaining what the Tsar was putting into the mouth of Haman. Haman's personal meter was Mikra, but sometimes you have the Medrash presenting the Tsar what the Tsar says for the Russian. That's what Rav Leff said as a third possible pshat. Rav Leff continued and said as follows: even if one feels that these pshatim might not be the smoothest pshatim in the Medrash, however, he quotes that there's an approach to Medrash that if you have a general shita in Chazal that many Midrashim point in one direction about a certain topic, then you find one Medrash which appears not to fit so well. So the Mefarshim say, he quoted the Radbaz, I think. He thought it was the Radbaz and maybe the Maharal. They have a principle that you have a right to explain a difficult medrash based on a sort of a vadai of pshat and the other midrashim. If several midrashim point in one direction, if many midrashim point in one direction, you have a right to explain one medrash that sounds a little different or might not fit so well along those lines as well. And that's how Rav Leff approaches this medrash of Haman. So this is the midah of Haman. Everything is by chance. He throws the dice, and that's the same as the midah of Amalek in the Torah. And even this medrash fits into this approach to Amalek and Haman as well. So Haman in the Megillah exactly corresponds to Amalek in the Chumash. So too, Bnei Yisrael's fight against Haman in the Megillah exactly corresponds to Bnei Yisrael's fight against Amalek in the Chumash, i.e., b'derech wa'b'derech, neis nister. So we already explained that Hashem's name is not in the Megillah, and that's the name of Megillah's Esther. This is the Maimer Chazal, source number 5, Haster Astir, Shalu Papunailo Rav Masna, Remez Liestim in Atarmi 9. Where is the Remez for Esther in the Torah? Amarlo, Anokhi Haster Astir. The Remez for Esther in the Torah is the phrase, I will hide myself, exactly when Hashem is hiding himself and it's evil he's not there, he still is there. That's the remez in the Torah. The Torah says, I will hide my face. When Hashem's face is hidden, he's still there. That is Esther. That's Esther's name. Megalas Esther. That's Megillas Esther. That's Esther's name. Esther's name hints at the basic yesod of all of Purim. It's that pasuk in the Torah. When Hashem is hidden, he is still there. Okay, so you have this, so we'll have a list. We have this Maimar Chazal. We have Hashem is not in the Megillah. We have the name Megillas Esther means Megalas Esther. 3. 4. The Gra, source 5a. Purim happens in Chutz Laretz. Purim happens, the Nes Purim happens in Chutz Laretz. The Gra in source 5a and the Mal and the Maral here, source 1 in the next sheet, say exactly the same yesod. Why? Because Chutz Laretz is a place where the Shechina rests in a less powerful and a less intense way. In Chutz Laretz, we only have Neis Nister. Now again, I want to explain, getting back to what we said earlier. Originally in the Midbar, our lives were Kolku and Neis Nigler. We entered Eretz Yisrael, a life of Neis Nister, with a remnant of Neis Nigler, where the Mechamesh Yericho was Neis Nigler, or the Beit Hamikdash had Neis Nigla. But going into Golus means leaving Eretz Yisrael, no Neis Nigla at all. Exactly, it's beautiful. You're in Golus,
You think the Shekhinah is not with you, there's no Neis Nigla, there's no Beis HaMikdash, and yet Hashem still helps you. Exactly. It fits perfectly that Purim happens in Golis, in Chutz Laaretz. That's Neis Nister. Chanukah happened in Eretz Yisrael. Neis Nigla, Neis Pach Shemen. It's a very, very sharp contrast. Purim and Chanukah, two Yamim Tovim Derabanan. Purim also has a theme of Neis Nister, by the way. Excuse me. Chanukah, as we discussed Chanukah time, also has a theme of Neis Nister, that the Muchama is from Hashem as well. That's a big theme of Chanukah, that's what Mefarshim say. But there's a difference. Chanukah is Eretz Yisrael, Chanukah has a Neis Nigla. So the Gra points out that it's not a coincidence that the Neis Purim happens in Chutz Laaretz, because the whole Yisod is even in Chutz Laaretz, when you're outside Eretz Yisrael, you still have Hashem helping you, B'derech Neis Nister. That's what the Gra says. Haneshu behester panim, klomar shesibe blasos b'derech hateva. Where's the Maral? Oh, Maral says, Neis hazeh haya kasher kvar hayu v'golus v'eino dome v'neis Chanukah. Ulachain, af kasher osa Hashem yisbarach lem neis, lo haya ka neis nigle. Kasher yoshev in Yisrael b'choshech hagolus. There's no neis nigle when we are in Golus. Works out beautifully. At the end of the shiur, we're going to have a chiddush of Rabbi Feinstein, which takes this Gra and Maral, and from being a wonderful chiddush to being a stupendous, awesome chiddush. It's, I think, an unbelievable wort, but we'll save it for the end. Next, source number 6, Medrash Rabbah. There's a Medrash which says, the Bnei Binyamin, the Bnei Rachel, Yosef was from Rachel and Mordechai was from Rachel. It says in the Medrash, Bnei Shel Rachel, Nisan Shave V'Gdulasan Shave. Very interesting, striking Medrash. Nisan Shave, their miracles are the same. What's shot in the Medrash? Nisan Shave. And the Medrash goes on to quote Psukim, that the language of the Psukim by Mordechai and the language of the Psukim by Yosef are similar. The Pashup shot in the Medrash is exactly this theme, Neis Nister. If you had to use two words to describe Yosef's life, from being in the pit till being vice president of Mitzrayim, it's Neis Nister. He's out of the pit, and he happens to be sold to the Midianim, who, that's coincidence number one, who happened to sell him to the Midianim, number two, who happened to bring him to Mitzrayim, number three, he ends up four in Potiphar's house, that's coincidence four. Agent Potiphar happens to desire Yosef, number five. He happens to end up in jail, number six. The Sarmash and Sarahopa happen to be in jail with him, number seven. They happen to have dreams, number eight. They get out of jail and they happen to forget about Yosef, number nine. They happen to, Mo Paro coincidentally has his own dreams, number ten. They remember Yosef's in jail, number 12. Yosef gets out, that's all my sister. Yosef goes from being near death, sold into slavery, to the vice president of Mitzrayim without a Neis Nigla, Neis Nister. That's pshat in the Medrash, that the godless of Yosef, the Neis of Yosef and Mordechai, are similar. Next, Kimu B'Kibu. We discussed this in Shir at length already. The Gemara says in Shabbos that there was a national rededication to the Torah on Purim. Kimu B'Kibu. That means Kimu Masha Kibu Kfar. There was a rededication to the Torah on Purim. What's pshat? So the Gemara explains in Shabbos that when Hashem gave us the Torah originally, the Gemara says, Kocho Aleim Har Kegigis. Hashem forced the Torah upon us. Hashem forced the Torah upon us. Kocho Aleim Har Kegigis. Hashem forced the Torah upon us. And the Gemara says that our original Kabbalah HaTorah, there was a deficiency in our original Kabbalah HaTorah. It wasn't perfect because it was forced upon us. That deficiency was rectified, was corrected, Bisman Purim. We reaccepted the Torah Miratzon willingly. That's what the Gemara says. Okay. The Mesha Chachma gives a beautiful pshat in that Gemara. It's the Mesha Chachma in Shmos Perek Yitzes Pasuk Yizayin. And I found later the exact same words in the Maharal, source 3 on the next page. They explain as follows. What's going on? Hashem pick up the mountain and force it upon us. They don't think we should take the Medrash in that type of literal fashion. But rather as follows. Here's what they said. When Hashem gave us the Torah, the miracles were incredible. All of nature stopped. We heard Hashem speak. The Torah testifies, all of Klal Yisrael heard Hashem speak. You're literally staring Hashem in the face. If you're staring Hashem in the face and Hashem says, here's my Torah, basically we couldn't finish a sentence? Say no. Correct. We couldn't say no. That's the pshat in Kaf Aleph Parak Gigis. Not that Hashem forced us at gunpoint to accept the Torah. No. The miracles were so intense. It was such a nace nigla time. How could you say no? You're staring Hashem in the face. Ah, but Purim is nace nister. On Purim, we had to find Hashem. On Purim, there was no nace nigla. Purim, Mordecai said, hey, listen, Jews, wake up. Listen, look what happens here. Event, 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 event. Oh, Hashem helped us. We found Hashem in a sense. That's the pshat was miratzon. When we experienced the miracle of Purim, we found Hashem. We found Hashem. So the national rededication to the Torah on Purim was miratzon. It wasn't forced upon us. There was no supernatural nes nigla, which was, in a sense, forcing us to accept God again and renew our dedication to Hashem. No! It was nes nister, and we still found Hashem. And we still made a Yom Tov. And we still got a Seder to thank Hashem. That's the pshat of Kimu v'Kiblu, the national rededication to the Torah that happened on Purim. It's a beautiful pshat of the Meshech Chochmah. Source 10. Hilchos Tainios of the Rambam. Now, it's interesting. Bnei Yisrael, the Medrash says that when Bnei Yisrael fought Amalek in the Midbar, Moshe had declared a Tainus. That was the first national day of fasting in history of Israel. The Medrash also says when Bnei Yisrael fought Amalek in the Megillah, we fasted as well. What's the connection of fasting and fighting Amalek? Well, what's the message of fasting? So the Rambam tells us. The Rambam gives us in Hilchos Tainios the basic pshat in what it means to fast. He says, Tzaras come on Klal Yisrael. You don't know what to do. We're having Tzaras now. What do? We're having Tzaras. There are two approaches. One approach is Mikra. That's the Rambam's language. Mikra, it happened. But that's the wrong approach. That's the cruel approach. The right approach is, hey, if Tzaras are coming, we have to turn to Hashem for help. How do you turn to Hashem for help? You do tshuva. You change your routine. You fast. It comes out from the Rambam. The basic message of a tainus is life is not mikra. The basic hashkafic message of a tainus is life is not mikra. That's what the Rambam says. If you don't fast, oh, it's mikra, I don't care, whatever, it's bad luck, what can I do? No, there's something you can do. Turn to Hashem, daven, fast, do tshuva. Fasting means life is not mikra. So it fits perfectly, literally perfectly, that when do Bnei Yisrael fast for the first time as a nation? When they're fighting Amalek b'derech nes nister. And they have to believe, hey, we're fighting Amalek now. It's not coming from us. It's not Mikra. It's coming from Hashem. So they fast. They fight Amalek in the Megillah. Again, nes nister. It's not from us. It's from Hashem. Then therefore they fast. A tainus and nes nister fit together perfectly. And that's what's happening in the Medrash. And that's what happened in the story of the Megillah. There's a Sfas Emes who points out that we have Mishta V'Simcha on Purim. Why Mishta V'Simcha? It's the bottom. I gave you the page number there on source 15. Why, he says? Because Purim was a nes b'derech ha-teva, so therefore we celebrate it by bringing Kedusha b'toch ha-teva. Those of you going to Rabbi Yoel's Suda this year, I think he might appreciate this Sfas Emes. Since the whole nes was b'derech ha-teva, therefore, the way you celebrate the Nes is bidafka b'tocha teva, in this world with a gashmias, mishta v'simcha. So the way you celebrate the Yom Tov parallels the nature of the miracle of the Yom Tov itself. Did you get the pun which the first time I said it 4 or 5 years ago was by chance, but now it's actually was by mistake, and now it's pretty good. The nature of miracle, nature of nature. Okay, maybe we're tired. Anyway, you want the way you celebrate the Yom Tov to correspond to the nature of the miracle. Okay, anyway, that's what he says. Okay. Kriyasa zu hirula. That is a phrase in the Gemara. The Gemara says that reading the Megillah is like saying Hallel. The Gemara discusses, why is there no Hallel on Purim? Why is there the Hallel on Pesach, Hallel on Hanukkah? Why is there no Hallel on Purim? The Gemara says, I'll tell you why. One sheet of Nachman, Kriyasa zu hirula. The meaning of the Megillah is Hallel. Rav Huttner in the Pacha Yitzchak gives a pshat in that. He says as follows. Kriyasa zu hirula. What does that mean? Kriyasa zu hirula. Reading the Megillah is like saying Hallel. How exactly is reading the Megillah like saying Hallel? When you read the Megillah, you're reading a story. What is Hallel? What does Hallel mean? Hallel means praising God, praising Hashem. How is reading the Megillah saying Hallel? You're reading a story. Think about it. What does the Gemara mean? How is that Hallel? You're reading a story. The answer is, it's implicit praise to Hashem. By reading the story and saying brachos, and we know Hashem helped us, and having the atmosphere, reading the Megillah is an implicit form, a muted form of praising Hashem. We're not saying, Hashem, you're great. We are implicitly saying, Hashem, you're great, by reading the Megillah. You buy that? That's what Rav Huttner says. In other words, Rav Huttner says, it's a Hallel that's more muted. It's a Hallel that's, in a sense, more hidden. That's the pshat of Kriyas Zu Hirula. Rav Huttner explains beautifully, it's in his letters at the end of Pachas Yitzchak in Purim, that Chazal wanted the nature of the Hallel on Purim to correspond to the nature of the miracle. Since the miracle is Nes Nister, we praise Hashem also with a Hallel that's more Nister, a Hallel that's more muted. That's the pshat in the Gemara. Pesach, in contrast, is Nes Nigla. We say Hallel at the Seder. We say Hallel in Shul even, according to some opinions. We're always saying Hallel. Hashem, you're great. Hashem says Pesach Nes Nigla, so we're saying Hallel, frontal, overt Hallel. At the Seder, we tell the story. We say Hallel. We do everything at the Seder. It's as frontal because Pesach is Nes Nigla. In contrast, the Purim is Nes Nigla. That's Nes Nister. I may have mentioned this before, just as a contrast. The Grub points out, you know, we know Moshe's name is not in the Haggadah. Moshe is left out of the Haggadah almost completely. He's mentioned once, incidentally. V'aminu b'Hashem of Moshe Avdo. So the Gra explains, I'll tell you why Moshe is not, the Gra explains. The whole theme of the Leil Seder is Hashem runs the world. Hashem does Nes Nigla. Hashem controls nature. Hashem controls everything. So you want to avoid confusion. You want the kids, you want everyone to understand, listen, don't get confused. Don't start thinking that, oh, in Mitzrayim, Moshe did this, Moshe was just doing whatever. Hashem did everything in Mitzrayim. At the Leil HaSeder, we purposely de-emphasize Moshe's role because the Leil HaSeder is about Hashem controls everything. Hashem changes the natural world. Hashem did Nes Nigla. When you think of Pesach, you think of Hashem, staring Hashem in the face. To make that point, to emphasize that point, we play down Moshe's role. So it's a very strong contrast. Pesach is Nes Nigla, Moshe is de-emphasized. Purim is Nes Nister, Hashem's left out of the Megillah. It's a very nice contrast. That's based on the Gra. The Gra says, the Gra in the Haggadah makes that point, that we bedachli Moshe out of the Haggadah, because we want to have the emphasis on Hashem. Hashem runs everything in the Megillah, in the Mitzrayim. It was Nes Nigla. Don't get confused. There was nothing human, nothing natural, nothing normal about Mitzrayim. It was all supernatural. Hashem. We know Moshe played a role, but at the Haggadah, we play down that role to make sure that it's crystal clear that the Leil HaSeder is about Nes Nigla from Hashem. That's the Gra. That's a nice contrast to the Megillah. There's a Gemara in Yuma on Daf Kuf Tes. It talks about the Sefer Paratehillim, L'Amanetech Ayelet HaShachar, the first light of the morning. The Gemara says this parak is a reference to Esther. And here's what the Gemara says. It says, Ma Shachar Sof Kol HaLayla Af Esther Sof Kol HaNisim. A very strange Gemara. Not strange as in weird, but strange as in striking. Just like the morning is the end of the night, Esther is the end of the miracles. Just like the morning is the end of the night, Esther is the end of the miracles. What is striking about that Gemara? What's striking? What's off? What's off by that Gemara? Just like the Shachar is the end of the night, Esther is the end of the miracles. What's off is as follows, and this is what the Mefarshim asks. You know, we picture, what are miracles? Clarity. Hashem showing himself to Bnei Yisrael. So I picture miracles going together with what? Going together with day. So if Esther's the end of the miracles, then it makes more sense that Esther should be like the end of the day. But the parak until the Gemara says Esther is so hanisim, and it's the end of the night, the beginning of the morning. Ayelet HaShachar. The first light. Oh, the first light of day, that's Esther. The end of the miracles. Huh? How does it fit that the end of the miracles is symbolized by the first light? What's the pshat? You understand the question? So I'll explain it again. It says, Ayelet HaShachar, the first light of day. Tehillim says that Ayelet HaShachar means, Ayelet HaShachar is a remnant to Esther. Meaning what? At the first light of day is when night's ending. Esther is the end of the night. How is Esther the end of the night? She's the last of the miracles. That's it. End of night, the end of the miracles. Because Esther was the, that's what it says. It's a Sof Kol HaNisim. Well, if you're trying to bring a remez to the end of something, do you think that on a symbolic level, the first light of the morning symbolizes the end of something? No. A first light symbolizes normally what? The beginning of something. But here we're saying that the first light is a symbol of the end of the nisim. What's the pshat in the Gemara? Is the question clear now? That's a problem in the Gemara. So I heard a pshat from Rav Lev Shlita once, and I just found now in Halichos Shlomo. Shlomo Zalman, Mamash, the same word for word, they both say as follows. I'll say it the way Rav Lev, I mean, it's not word for word the same, but I'll say it the way Rav Lev said it. He said as follows. He said, here's the pshat. When it says Esther Sof Kol HaNisim, it means that Esther is Nes Nister. Esther is Nes Nister. And it means as follows. A Nes Nigla is like a flash of lightning. Let's say it's dark outside, and there's a lightning flash. What happens? Wow! I can see! How long can you see for? A few seconds, and it's gone. That's a flash of lightning. Lightning goes away, you can't see anymore. So, you know, if it's dark outside, and it's lightning, you don't feel so good, because in between the lightning bolts, it's dark, and you can't see anything. You're nervous. When do you feel, oh, now I'm confident, now I'm happy, now I'm going to survive? When do you feel that way? When do you feel that you're going to make it? When? When you see the first light of day, Ayelet HaShachar. Most of Hashem's miracles for us were Neis Nigla. Neis Nigla in the Midbar, Neis Nigla in Mitzrayim, Neis Nigla by Svisha, Neis Nigla, Neis Nigla, Neis Nigla. Okay, Neis Nigla are great. Hashem, you're with us, you're helping us, you're guarding us. Then they go away. But you can be nervous. I don't know, I don't see an Nesidim, I don't see Hashem. Along comes Nes Nister of Purim. Once you have the Nes Nister of Purim, you realize even when you don't see Hashem in an obvious way, He's still helping you. B'nai Yisrael, you should realize it's like you've just seen the beginning of the morning. You're safe and secure now. Because wherever you go into Golos, wherever you go for the best of history, Hashem will be helping you, even if you don't see him, he's there, Nes Nister. In that sense, Esther is the Ayelet HaShachar. Once we have the Nes Purim, we now have the confidence, the security. Hashem's always, it's like the sun's rising. In a sense, I don't need the Nes Niglas anymore. If it's dark outside, you need lightning bolts. But once the morning, the light comes, you don't need the lightning anymore. The sun is there, you're having light for the whole day. Before Nes Purim happens, Klal Yisrael didn't have this proof, didn't have this Yom Tov to celebrate Nes Nister. Hashem's always with us, all the time, even when we don't see him. They believed it, but a Yom Tov, you know, emphasized, the whole theme of Purim is emphasizing this point. Hashem is with us, even if we don't see him. Once you have that emunah, once you have that feeling, that hargasha, you don't need the lightning anymore. That's the morning lights. So Esther, which is the Nes Nister, is a remez to the morning lights. That now you have the confidence that Hashem will always be helping you. There's a Maimer Chazal that says that Lasid Lavo, all of the Yom Tovim will be batal, except for Yemei Purim. That's a Maimer Chazal. There's a Maimer Chazal that Lasid Lavo, all of the Yom Tovim will be batal, except for Purim. Okay. What's Pshat in that Maimer Chazal? So the Torah Tmima has a Perush on Gilas Esther, and he quotes his father. Who's his father? The Aruch HaShulchan. Right? The Aruch HaShulchan was heard from his father. The Aruch HaShulchan was the brother-in-law of the Netziv and the father-in-law of the Netziv a little later in his life. The Aruch HaShulchan was married to the Netziv's sister. So there he was his brother-in-law. And then the Netziv's first wife died, and the Aruch HaShulchan had a daughter, and she got married, and she wanted to marry a Talmid Chacham. This guy was a faker. And she realized soon after they got married that he was a faker. So she wanted a divorce, she wouldn't give a divorce, she ran away to the forest, to get away from her husband. I'm sorry, she left her husband. And that was illegal in those days. So to avoid the police, she had to live in the forest for a little while. She ran away to live in the forest. She wanted to marry Talmid Chacham. So eventually she got a divorce. She said, I want to marry Talmid Chacham. The Netziv needed a wife, a second wife. So the Netziv married the Aruch HaShulchan's daughter. So the Netziv became the Aruch HaShulchan's son-in-law. That's an interesting quirk of... You had to marry your niece. It's mutter to marry your niece. He married his niece. He married your niece to become the father's son-in-law. So the Netziv was the Aruch HaShulchan's brother-in-law and later the Aruch HaShulchan's son-in-law. Okay. Interesting story. So the Torah Tmima quotes his father, the Aruch HaShulchan. Why Purim? So the Aruch HaShulchan gives a beautiful pshat, ma'amish, a beautiful pshat. Bimos HaMashiach, it's going to be, you know, there are going to be so many examples of Nes Nigla, we're not going to need the Yom Tovim. We'll have the Beit HaMikdash again. We'll see so many examples of Hashem and the Beit HaMikdash, Nes Nigla. But Nes Nister always applies. I mean, there will be a natural world. People are going to breathe. Things are going to grow. The concept of finding Hashem within the natural world will still apply to Moshe Mashiach. We're not going to need the reminders, Nes Nigla, Nes Nigla. We'll have so many Nes Niglas, we'll have the Beit HaMikdash. There'll be so many obvious examples of Hashem's control of the world in Nes Nigla. And you know, just the Mechemes Ol Gemugel and the Yomei Hadin, we're not going to need the Nes Niglas anymore. That's what he says in his quote to his father. But Nes Nister always applies. I can breathe. I can walk. I can talk. The food grows. That's a Nes Nister. The idea that I should believe that that's from Hashem as well is still going to apply to Yosef Mashiach. And therefore it makes sense that even you Yosef Mashiach, We're still going to have Purim, whose message is
Nesnister. Okay. Finally, and then we'll stop, there's a board of Rav David Feinstein Shlita in his Parish on the Megillas Esther. And this board will help, will also be an intro to the next Sunday's class on the Nesnister and the Megillah. This board is taking what the Gur and the Maral say and just expanding on it in a very big way, which is as follows. We mentioned before that the Nes Purim happened in Chutz Laaretz, which fits with the idea of Nes Nister, because Hashem's Shechina is not as powerful in Chutz Laaretz, and therefore everything's Nes Nister. Fine. Now, when you read the Megillah, what is the night when all of the Nes Nisters in the Megillah come together? If you had to choose one night of the ultimate Nes Nister, capital Nun, in the Megillah, which night is it? You'll know next week. When Perek Vav starts, we'll discuss next week, that's when all the Nes Nisters in the Megillah come together. It all converges on that night. That's the night when Ahasuerus can't sleep. That's the night when all of the coincidental events of the Megillah come together. Vashti's killed, Esther's queen, Mordechai's in the palace, saved the king's life, he saves the king's life. It's forgotten about, etc., and then the king can't sleep. So it comes out coincidentally that the same night that Haman is coming over to have Mordechai killed is exactly the same night Ahasuerus can't sleep, and that's exactly the same night that they read about something which happened 5 years ago that was forgotten about. That combination is a one in a quadrillion. Mordechai saved the king's life 5 years ago. It was forgotten about. When did that fact happen to pop up again in world history? The exact night that Haman's on his way over to kill Mordechai. That's a one in quadrillion. We'll discuss that next week. That's Nesnis. That's the ultimate Nesnister. That's why when we read the Megillah, it says, "Ba'alahu nadadash nas hamel." Who's the Melech? Hashem. Hashem's waking up. This is when all of the miracles come together. Okay? So that night, when Ahasuerus can't sleep, is when all of the Nes Nisters converge and the beginning of the Yeshua of Klai Yisrael, the Yeshua of Klai Yisrael starts. What was the calendar date of that evening when Ahasuerus couldn't sleep? What was the calendar date of that evening when Ahasuerus couldn't sleep? So there's actually a machlokas about it, but there's a machlokas. What were the 3 days of Esther's fast? That night was the night in between the two parties, correct? Esther fasted for 3 days. Then she came to the party with Ahasuerus. Then she asked for a second party the next night. That night was between the parties. So some versions in Chazal hold that the 3 days of Esther's fasting were Yud Gimel, Yud Dalet, and Tesvav Nisan. That's the version that Rebbe goes with. So it comes out that what? That night was what? Leil Tetzayin. Leil Tetzayin Nisan. Interesting. Leil Tetzayin Nisan. Leil Tetzayin Nisan is the second night of Pesach. Bnei Yisrael are in Golus, sitting down to their Pesach Seder, and that's when all the Nes Nisters come together. Rav David says it's no coincidence. What's the pshat? The pshat is as follows. If you had to choose during the year, you're living in Golus and Bavel, what night of the year do you most feel the Golus? I feel like I'm in Chutz Laaretz. Second day Yom Tov. Very strange. Yom Tov is over. It was yesterday. I'm making brachos. I'm making kiddush. I'm eating matzah. I'm saying a birchas hamitzvah on the matzah. 4 cups of wine. A birchas hamitzvah on the maror. Why am I doing this again? You're at the second Seder. Abba, what are we doing? The Torah says one day. Why are we doing two? I'm sorry, son. Nebuch, we're in Golus now. We're in Chutz Laaretz. And because we're in Golus, we're far from Eretz Yisrael. We have to keep 2 days. We're not sure what the right day is. We keep 2 days of Yom Tov. The Leil HaSeder is the ultimate night of the year when a Jew feels, I'm in Golus, I'm in Chutz Laaretz,
I'm not in Eretz Yisrael. I'm afraid Hashem is not with me now. I don't have it with me. Rav David says, exactly. That's exactly when Hashem does the Neis Nisters. Hashem is saying, when you are not just living in Golus, when you're experiencing Golus, when you're halachically expressing Golus, you're saying Birchos HaMitzvah, you're saying Kiddush on the second night. How strange is that? You are like screaming out, I'm in Golus now. Oyvei, I'm not near Hashem. Hashem helps you. B'derech Neis Nister. That's why all of the Neis Nisters come together on that night. That's the ultimate night of Chutz. This is the Grun, the Maral's board, taking 10 steps further. It's not just that Neis Purim happened in Chutz La'aretz. Neis Purim happened in Chutz La'aretz on the night of the year when a Jew most feels like he's in Chutz La'aretz. And he's experiencing the Golus. He's experiencing being far from Hashem. You think you're far from Hashem? You're not so far. I'm still with you in a hidden way, but I'm still with you even in Golus, even in Chutz La'aretz. That's why the miracles of Purim happened. That's why that's a good explanation. That's a good explanation why all the Nesis in the Megillah come together on the Lel Tezayin, according to that of Yom Chazal, the second night of the Seder. Okay, I want to add one more thing. Sorry, I know I said I was going to stop, but okay, one more thing. And then I think we will stop. There's the idea of Kibbul v'Kibbul, that Purim is a day of Kabbalah Satorah. Which Kabbalah Satorah did we experience? Which Torah did we remakabal on Purim? So there's a Medrash Tanhuma which goes as follows. The Gemara says that Kafa Aleim Har Tegigis, the Torah was forced upon us. There's a major kasha on that Gemara which Tosfos asks. What's the major kasha? Nasev Nishma. We said Nasev Nishma. How can you? What wasn't forced upon us was Nasev Nishma. That's a famous kasha. There are lots of good answers to that kasha. The Maharal has an answer. There are lots of answers to that kasha. Tosfos gives an answer. There are lots of answers to that kasha. Okay. There's a Medrash Tanhuma at the end of Parshas Noah that my Rebbe Rav Shechter Shkita likes to quote a lot, and the Rav quoted it. Actually, I'm not sure the Rav quoted it. Rav Shechter quoted it. Which is as follows. The Medrash says, Nasev Nishma was in Parashat Yechzkel. Kafa Kigigis was what? Parashat Baal Peh. Which makes a lot of sense. Parashat Yechzkel, the mitzvahs in the Torah, they're not so hard, not so much to do. Pretty easy to learn. Parashat Baal Peh. All of the dinim and working it out and the amelus to understand and to work and figure out and the details of Parashat Peh and the chumras and the details of that's hard to do. That was forced upon them. According to the Medrash Tanhuma, then, when it says Kimu B'Kiblu, which Torah were we being Mekabel on Purim? Torah Shebaal Peh. That's what it comes out. Torah Shebaal Peh, we accepted Miratzon originally. Torah Shebaal Peh was forced upon us. Now it's the simple. Now we're happy about it. Now it's Miratzon. Okay? So it comes out that Purim is the Yom Tov of Torah Shebaal Peh. That's what it comes out to. And there are many makoros which fit with this idea of praying being the Yom Tov of Torah Shebaal Peh. So the Kedushas Levi, Rabbi Yitzchak Eich Mibraditcher, says exactly, the Torah Shebaal Peh is mechuseh, is hidden within what? The Torah Shebichsav. So it fits very well that the Kabbalas HaTorah of Purim was the hidden Torah, the Torah Shebaal Peh that's hidden. You don't see it. It's not there. It's Baal Peh. You don't see it. It's hidden. Torah Shebaal Peh, you see. Torah Shebaal Peh is hidden. So therefore, it makes sense that the Torah, that Purim is the Yom of Torah Shebaal Peh, because Torah Shebaal Peh is more of the hidden Torah. It's hidden. It's mechusa in the Torah Shebaal Peh. You don't see. There are ramazim. It's in between the lines. If you know the rules, if you know the Yom Midah Shatran and Jeshuvan, then you figure it out. It's there, but it's hidden in between the lines of the Torah Shebichsav. So it works out beautifully that Yom Kippur, that Purim is the Yom Tov of Torah Shebaal Peh, because that's the Torah that's more mechusa, hidden inside the Torah Shebichsav. It's another idea of Purim Yom Tov Neis Nister, and all of these Ramazim and ideas that fit with Purim Yom Tov Neis Nister. Next week, Hashem, on Sunday, we'll discuss the Nes Nisters in the Megillah itself, and we'll see in the Megillah line with many examples. Primarily, the Gra and the Malbim explain this. They work out Nes Nisters in the Megillah with a kicker, with a bonus capital B. From my Rebbe of Shechter Shlita, one of the best words you're ever going to hear on the Nes Nisters of Purim. That we'll discuss more next week, Hashem Sunday. We will stop here.
Okay, I just wanted to add a few points to the shir on the idea that Purim is Yom Tov of Nes Nisters. Number one, I wanted to better explain the question regarding the Gemara in Yuma on Daf Kof Tesem Rav. The Gemara there in Yuma compares Esther to the Sof HaLayla to Alos HaShachar. It says Esther is the Sof Kohanisim. So just like Esther is the Sof Kohanisim, so in a similar way, Esther is the Alos HaShachar, which is the end of the night. So the question is as follows. We normally associate Nisim with positive things, a happy time, Hashem is helping us, He's watching over us. Nisim, you would assume, is more of a day-type thing. So if and the night in the Medrash is always a symbol of Galus and Tzaras, so you would have thought that if we're discussing miracles would be the day, and if Esther is considered the Sof Kol HaNisim, so then Esther should be the Sof HaYom, not the Sof HaLayla. What's the pshat in the Gemara that the Nisim are like nighttime, and Esther, as the Sof Kol HaNisim, is like the Sof HaLayla? That's really the question on the Gemara. So Rav Lef Shlita gave an explanation. The truth is, his explanation was, I didn't mention this in the shir, he was quoting Rav Yonasan Eibshitz, and he gave his beautiful explanation how it's like a Nes Nigla lights up the night like a lightning bolt, but then when it's gone, it's over, and you're still stuck at nighttime, you're with darkness, without Hashem, in a sense, without being sure that Hashem's watching over you. And then a Nes Nister means Hashem's helping you all the time within the world of Teva, even if you don't see a Nes Nigla. And that's like the first rays of the sun in the morning. A person feels secure and safe because he knows that now the day is coming, and he will be safe. That was the answer which we discussed. But I wanted to better explain more sharply the question which Rav Lef had raised in the name of Rav Yonasan Eibshitz. Okay, that's one point. Next, Rav Mirsky Shlita, in his Sefer Hegyonei Halacha, Chelek Beis, page 173 to 174, he makes 5 points which connect with this Yesod, that Purim is the Yom Tov of Nes Nisner. And I just want to explain them one by one. Number one, the halacha is Kara l'mafreya lo yotza. If one reads the Megillah out of order, they're not yotze. If you read, let's say, Perek Beis, Pasuk Dalet, before you read Perek Beis, Pasuk Gimel, you're not yotze. You must read the Megillah in order. This halacha actually is more relevant than we think it is, than a person would think of, would think. You know, who would read the Megillah out of order? Well, I'll give you a case. A person has to hear every word of the Megillah. Let's say you're at the Megillah reading, and you feel you missed a few words. So now, those few words you missed, you have to make them up. So a person might say, okay, I have an idea. I'll wait for the Baal Kore to get to Haman's name. When the Baal Kore gets to Haman's name, people make noise, it takes a few seconds. So these few words that I missed, I will, in a sense, make them up when they get to Haman's name, and that's when I'll have a few seconds to make up those words. I'll save these words for them. I'll make it up then. You can't do that. Because if you wait until the next time Haman's name comes, let's say, to make up the words that you missed, you end up reading those words out of order. That's not allowed. You're not Yotze. So if a person misses some words of the Megillah, what they have to do is, they have to start reading to themselves from the point where they feel they stopped hearing the words of the Megillah, and you read quietly to yourself, and you catch up to where the Baal Kore is up to, and then you jump back in with the Baal Kore, listening to the Baal Kore. That's based on the idea of Kara l'mafreya lo yotze. What's the message behind this halacha? So Mirsky explains exactly this idea. Since Purim is Yom Tov of Nes Nisner, regarding a Nes Nisner, you have to see how things develop, how one incident leads into another. the order is crucial. The order is crucial. See, if you have an Eis Nigla, an Eis Nigla is awe-inspiring and tremendous no matter what the order was. An Eis Nigla happened, it happened. Hashem's incredible. By an Eis Nister, the whole point is that the order matters, that this event led to that event, led to that event, led to that event. So to reflect that notion, the halacha is by the Megillah, that Karla Mafer Lo Yatza. You have to read the Megillah in order, because the point is you have to appreciate the order and appreciate the Eis Nister based on the order of the events. Okay. Point number two. The halacha is that we know that we read the Megillah at night and again during the day. Twice. The Rishonim say, Tosfos in Megillah, and Avdaad Amar Aleph says, and other Rishonim say this as well, that the Ikar, the primary reading, the primary Pesumei Nisa, is during the day. That of the two times we read the Megillah, the more important one, the more primary one, is the reading during the day. That's what Tosfos says. Why? Why is the reading during the day more important? That's one question. Another question is that when the Gemara tells us that one is chayev to read the Megillah during the day, the language of the Gemara is, you're chayev to read the Megillah at night, ulishanosa bayom, and to review it during the day. That's the language of the Gemara, and afdaal ramad alf in Maseches Megillah, and to review it during the day. What's this language of review? That the reading in the morning is a review of the reading at night. So Rav Mirsky explains, and what he says is really based on the Netziv's pshat in Megillah. The Netziv wrote a parasha on the Gemara called Merome Sada, and the idea is as follows. The Megillah is Neis Nister. Every event, although each event in and of itself is basic, appears to, each event is not supernatural, but fitting all together, it all fits together to save Klal Yisrael. So events that happen in Perek Aleph and Perek Beis don't seem so super significant. When does a person appreciate the significance of every event in Perek Aleph and every event in Perek Beis and Perek Gimel? When do you appreciate the significance? When you get to the end. When you get to the end and you see how it all fits together, that everything that Hashem did in Perek Aleph and Beis ends up being part of saving Klal Yisrael, then you appreciate the Neis Nister. You appreciate the Pesumei Nisa of the early Prakim even more. So in a sense, a person doesn't have a full appreciation of the first parts of the Megillah until they get to the end of the Megillah and complete the Megillah. So this is why the reading during the day is more accurate. It's a more primary reading. It's the more important reading, because when you read the Megillah during the day the second time, now you know the whole story. You read it last night. I read the Megillah last night. I know the whole story. So now when I read Perek Aleph and Beis in the morning, the second time, I appreciate more fully the significance of everything I'm reading. And there's more Pesumei Nisa. I say, oh wow, I'm reading Perek Beis now. In Perek Beis, this happens to Haman, and that happens, and Bigson and Seresh. And I appreciate how everything that's happening in Perek Beis is part of the miracle, is part of the Neis Nister. So when you read the Megillah in the morning the second time, you have a better appreciation of the Nisim Nistarin in the Megillah. And this is Meduyuk in the language of the Gemara, Lishanosa. The morning reading is a review. When you're reviewing the reading of the Megillah, when you're reviewing it, you appreciate it more, because the whole point is that now you appreciate the significance of the early events more. So that's a beautiful pshat, A, as to why the morning reading is more ikur, it's more Pesumei Nisa. B, the language of the Gemara Lishanosa, and that fits exactly with this Yisod, that Purim is Yom Tov of Neis Nister. So that's point number two. Okay. A third point is in the Magen Avraham. The Magen Avraham in Siman Tov Reish Tzadi quotes an earlier idea that when you're reading the Megillah, you're not supposed to be mafsik bein pasuk lepasuk too much. Between each pasuk, you're not supposed to you're supposed to have very short breaks between each pasuk, as if you're reading it like, you know, sort of as one flow. L'fisha tzayuchi kosa ki igeris. You have to read it like a letter. When you read a letter, you read a letter as a flow, and you just keep on reading. What's the idea? How come by the Megillah, we have to read it as if it's one flow? So the pshat l'chora is as follows. The idea is nes nista, how every event fits together with the other events to save Klal Yisrael. So you want to see how it's all interconnected. Every piece of the Megillah is interconnected to every other piece of the Megillah. How do you express halachically that every piece of the Megillah is interconnected? By reading it without taking, by reading it while taking very, very short breaks between the psukim. Let's say lehavdil you have a book, let's say you have a history book with different chapters. So very often each chapter has its own independent theme. So you read a chapter and you think about it and then you move on to a new chapter. You don't always have such an interrelationship between the different chapters. Each chapter might be a separate unit, not by the Megillah. By the Megillah, each pasuk is really all part of this one picture, this one story. It's all interconnected. So halachically, we show that it's interconnected by reading it, taking very, very short breaks in between each pasuk. That Magen Avraham fits beautifully into this hashkafic yisod that Purim is Yom Tov Nes Nistar. Number four is as follows. We know that the whole Megillah, the whole story of Purim, was governed by Hashem. So Haman's rise was, of course, governed by Hashem, and Haman's downfall was governed by Hashem, by HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. So the Mefarshim find a remez to this in the Megillah. In Perek Hei, Pasuk Dalet, the Pasuk says, Yavo HaMelech VeHaman Hayom. The king and Haman should come today. Yavach v'Haman Hayom. That was the height of Haman's power. Haman was second in power only to the king. And now the queen likes him too, and the queen's inviting him to a party, only the king and him. Haman's at the peak of his power when he's invited to the party. And the first letter of each of those four words spell out Hashem's name. Yud Kei Vav Kei. Yavo HaMelech v'Haman Hayom. That's a remez that Haman's greatness, his godliness, his rise to power is being governed by Hashem. The beginning of each of those four words, spells out Hashem's name. Later in the Megillah, in Perek Zion, Pasuk Zion, when Haman's already having Tzaras, it says, Ki kolsa elav hara'a. Haman's finished, his fate is sealed, he's going to be killed now. The last letter of each of those four words is also Hashem's name. Yud Kei Vav Kei. Ki Kolsa, Elav, Hara'ah. It's a remez that Haman's downfall, captured by the end of his name, spells out Hashem's name as well. It's a beautiful remez that Hashem is running the show, both the beginning and the end, the rise of Haman and the fall of Haman as well. A fifth point Rav Mirsky mentions is as follows. There's a gra on a pasuk in Shir HaShirim. In Perek Beis, Pasuk Ches, the pasuk writes, Hashem is mashkiach min achalonos, meitzitz min acharakim. Hashem watches over us from the windows, and he also peeks through the cracks. He peeks through the cracks as well. What's the pshat of this pasuk? What's the meaning of these two phrases? Hashem watches over us from the windows, and also peeks through the cracks. So the Gemara said as follows. It's not much a beautiful pshat. Let's say a parent's watching a child play outside. Sometimes a parent will watch from the window. When a parent watches from the window, so the parent sees the child. If the child looks up to the window, he might see the parent. When you're standing at the window and you're watching over your children, the child can also see you in the window. So sometimes you're watching over someone and the person who's being watched can see you as well. But sometimes the parent is watching the child and the parent wants to watch the child and the child should know that he's watching in a hidden way. You want to see what's happening. I said, you don't want your child to know that you're watching. So what do? You close the window and you peek through a crack. So you can see your child, but your child has a very hard time seeing you. The Gemara said, exactly. Sometimes Hashem is Mashgiach over Klal Yisrael in a way that we can see him as well. Those are the Nisim of Mitzrayim, the Gemara says. The first half of the pasuk refers to the Nisim of Mitzrayim, Nes Nigla, when Hashem is watching over us. B'derech Nes Nigla. So then, Hashem sees us, and we can see Hashem in a sense. When you see a Nes Nigla, wow, Hashem's helping me. It's like you're staring Hashem in the face. When you see a Nes Nigla, that's Hashgiach Min HaChalonos. But sometimes Hashem watches over us. And sometimes Hashem helps us not where we can see Him, but rather B'derech Nes Nister, The Gemara says, the second half of the pasuk are the nisim of Purim, Nes Nister, where Hashem is being made tzitz min acharakim. Hashem is watching over us through the cracks. He can see us. He's watching us. We have a much harder time finding Him. And that's the pshat of the pasuk. He's there. And we know He's there. But it's harder to see. It's harder to find. And that's the pshat of made tzitz min acharakim. That Gemara fits beautifully. Mamash, that Gemara is beautiful. That Gemara is A, a beautiful Gemara, and B, it mamash captures the whole theme of what we've been developing, that as opposed to Pesach, which is the Yom Tov of Neis Nigla, Purim is, of course, the Yom Tov of Neis Nista. Those are 5 points I found in Rav Mirsky's Sefer Yonah Halacha. Okay. Three more ideas, and then we'll close. Two of the main mitzvot of Purim are Shalach Manos and Matanos of Yom. So I once saw the following idea. I think it's a beautiful idea that goes as follows. Giving presents to someone, or giving a tzedakah to an ani, these are things that we do during the year as well. You know, we sometimes send gifts to our friends. We sometimes give tzedakah to anim. So it's interesting. The mitzvahs of Purim are things that we do all year round. I mean, we have a special kavanah on Purim, but the basic mitzvahs we do all year round. So in a sense, the mitzvahs hayom of Purim are more hidden. It's not so obvious it's a mitzvah. Let's compare it to Sukkot. Sukkot we shake a lulav. We never shake a lulav during the year. Sukkot we sit in a sukkah. We don't sit in a sukkah during the year with schach on it like that. At the Seder we have a special mixture of maror, haroses, and matzah. We daftly drink four cups of wine at certain intervals. These are not things that we do during the year normally. So it's obvious that it's on Hanukkah we light a candle by our front door. We don't do that during the year normally. So it's obvious that those mitzvos, it's nikkur, it's obvious that those mitzvos are mitzvos that we're doing as a mitzvah for Hashem. On Purim, the act that we do is something basically we do during the year as well. So the fact that it's a mitzvah at all is somewhat more hidden. So I saw some of Farshi wanted to say exactly, since Purim is the Yom Tov Neis Nister, Chazal wanted us to have mitzvos that they themselves were somewhat hidden. The mitzvos themselves were somewhat hidden behind the veil of normalcy, and in that sense, that fits with the theme as well of Purim being the Yom Tov of Neis Nista. Okay. Next. We mentioned during the Shir, the famous Medrash Tanchuma at the end of Parshas Noach, that the Medrash there is referring to the Kasha that Tosfos raises. I mean, Tosfos came after the Medrash, but the Medrash is dealing with the same kasha which Tosfos raises, that the Gemara says in Shabbos and Daf Peches that Kofo Aleim Harakigis, Hashem pours the Torah upon us, and yet we know we said Naser Benishma. How do those two Makoros fit together? So the Medrash answers, not Naser Benishma was Torah Shebichsav, and Kofo Harakigis was Torah Shebaalpeh, and therefore in Purim, when we had a rededication to the Torah, it was primarily Torah Shebaalpeh. So I explained that Torah Shebaal Peh fits with Neis Nister because Torah Shebaal Peh is really hidden within the Torah Shebichsav. I quoted from the Mefarshim that Torah Shebaal Peh is hidden, it's Nistar within Torah Shebichsav, and in that sense, Torah Shebaal Peh fits with Neis Nister. There's another sense, it's the flip side of the same coin, how Torah Shebaal Peh fits with Neis Nister, and that is that the Torah Shebaal Peh reveals the secrets. It reveals the true meaning of the Torah Shebichsav. The Torah Shebaal Peh is Megala Seser. It reveals the true meaning, the true intention of the Torah Shebichsav. It fits beautifully. We have a Torah Shebichsav, and there is a hidden meaning, hidden beneath, or hidden inside the Torah Shebichsav, and the Torah Shebaal Peh reveals that which is hidden, and reveals the true pshat. So just like on Purim, in the Megillah, we reveal that Hashem is hidden behind ordinary natural events. So too, the Torah Shebaal Peh reveals what's hidden behind the Torah Shebichsav, and it's a beautiful pshat, how Torah Shebaal Peh fits with Neis Nister, and that's the pshat of the Medrash Tanchuma, that Purim becomes the Yom Matan Torah, Dafka of Torah Shebaal Peh. Oh, it's actually going to be 4 points. It's actually going to be 4 points, sorry. Okay. A third point is as follows. There's a mitzvah of drinking on Purim, and in some Makaros it sounds like there's a mitzvah to get very drunk on Purim. What's the idea behind that? So elsewhere, elsewhere I've discussed that what Rav Sarcha Cohen says and others, that drinking on Purim is megala seisa. It reveals what's inside of you. It reveals a person's true inner, true self. That drinking is megala seisa. So that fits with the theme, because you know nichnas yayin yotzei sod. When you drink, the truth comes out. So the idea of drinking on Purim fits well with this basic yisod that Purim is the yom tov of Beis Esther. I'm sorry. It's actually 5 points. I'm sorry. Okay. So that's, forgive me. That's a third point. A fourth point that's related is, we know there's a minhag on Purim to wear costumes. People who wear masks or costumes. So the Mefarshim say, yeah, this fits with the theme of Purim. There's a fourth point. That when you wear a costume, what's the idea? The true you is hidden beneath the costume. When you wear a costume, what are you saying? You're saying, look, here's what I look on the outside. But underneath, there's another person. There's the real me is underneath the costume, underneath the mask. That's exactly what Purim's all about. Purim is Nes Nista. We see a natural world and one and this event and that event, but underneath the natural world really is there's a real world, another more real world, the world of Hashem running the show, Hashem guiding the world history. So that's the idea of the mask, which hides the true you, is parallel to the mask of world history, hiding the true history of the world being governed by Hashem. Let's say Lamashal. In the last few years, the United States Army has wiped out the greatest enemy of Israel, the most potent enemy of Israel, the strongest enemy of Israel, the strongest enemy of Israel, the Iraqis. Why did this happen? So for political reasons, that the first President Bush attacked Iraq and he didn't finish the job, and Saddam Hussein was upset, and Saddam Hussein at one point tried to assassinate the first President Bush. That was a mistake. And then the second President Bush, the first one's son, came to power, and for his own political reasons, he felt it was time to wipe out Iraq. So if you read the newspapers, you have very good reasons why the present President Bush decided to wipe out Saddam Hussein's army and wipe out his strength. We know that Hashem has been orchestrating world events. So it works out that Israel's greatest enemy is wiped out by the American army. It's a wonderful thing. It's a very good thing for Israel. That's a classic example of Nes Nister, where there's a true governing of world events being hidden by what the newspapers say and what the political scientists say, that this leads to that. That's all true. But underneath is a more, the truer reason, the real reason, is that it's Hashem is running the show. That's point number four. And finally, and this is finally, there's a word I heard from, and with this we'll close, there's a word that I heard from a friend of mine, Rav Aaron Cohen Shlita. He's a Rav of Shul and Passaic, and a teacher in Stern College. So Rav Aaron said as follows. You read in the Megillah, Rav Cohen said as follows. You read in the Megillah, Hipil Pur Hu HaGorah. Pur Hu HaGorah. Okay. It's an interesting phrase that the Megillah gives you a translation. Pur is a Persian word for lots, and Gorah is the Hebrew word for lots. So why does the Megillah do this? Why does the Megillah do this? So Pashup Shat, the Megillah is giving you a translation. Hipil Pur Hu HaGorah. Okay, very nice. Now you have to know that it's a Persian word, so we translate it into Hebrew, and it's a Golo. Very nice. Okay. However, the Megillah repeats this phrase later on, not when Haman's drawing the lots. Later on, when the Megillah is repeating what Haman did, again the Megillah writes, he peel poor hu ha gora. Esther's writing the Megillah with Mordechai, and the Megillah itself repeats again later, he peel poor hu ha gora. Well, this is strange. If the phrase "he peel poor hu ha goral" is just supposed to be a translation, a dictionary for us, why do you have to have it a second time? One time is enough. So clearly, then that phrase must have some deeper, more significant meaning, and it does. So the Mefarshim give different approaches. So Rav Cohen said as follows: Hagoral, the Goral. That's a Heir Yediyah. Whenever you see a Hagoral, the Heir Yediyah, that means we're referring back to a previously known Goral, the Goral, the known Goral. What known Goral is the Megill referring to? So one could easily conjecture it's referring to the Goral that's mentioned in the Chumash. Hagoral. Well, what are, if someone says, what is the Goral in Judaism? The Goral is mentioned in the Chumash. The Chumash mentions two Goralot. One, the Chalukah Asa'aretz, the Biding of Eretz Yisrael, and one, the Goral, during the Avodah Yom Kippur, when the Kohen Gadol would decide which of the two Se'irim would be Lashem, and which would be Lazazel. So our Rekohen said as follows. This is the Pshat. Haman is drawing lots. It's like it's by chance. It's a lottery by chance. The Megillah is saying, he peel poor, who ha Goral, his drawing of lots, which he thinks is by chance, he thinks is Mikra. Really, it's the Goral, these two Goralos in the Chumash are two examples where Hashem was governing the Goralot in a very direct way, in a very strong way. Hashem governs everything in the world. But by these two examples, the Torah emphasizes, and the Chazal emphasizes that Hashem is running the show. When Eretz Yisrael was divided up, Hashem wanted, had ideas how each part of Eretz Yisrael fits with a different shevet. This shevet fits here, this shevet fits there. So they drew goralot, they drew lots in a sense to figure out where each shevet would get part of Eretz Yisrael. But in reality, the drawing of the lots was being directly governed by Hashem. As we know, Hashem wanted this shevet to get this section, this shevet to get another section. So it's goralot, it's the drawing of lots, but it's goralot that is completely not by chance. It's the opposite of being by chance. It's directly governed by Hashem. So too, during the Avodah Yom Kippur, when the Kohen Gadol drew lots, so the Gemara, the Chazal tell us that it was very significant if Lashem Chatzos came out on the right side, that was a very good omen. It was good mazel for Klai Yisrael. It came out on the left side, it wasn't so good. In other words, the Kohen Gadol was drawing lots, but when the lots came out one way or the other, there was guided significance from Hashem about where the lots came out. So the Goralot and the Chumash are two examples where Hashem is running the show directly in a very direct, specific way. This is the Pshat in the Megillah. This is what Purim is all about. He peel poor. Huh, I think this is Mamash, a beautiful Pshat. And I mentioned this Pshat to Rav Nevin Sol Shlita, and he said he thought it was very good, and he said Yashar Koyach. He said Yashar Koyach to this Pshat from Rabbi Cohen. The he peel poor. Haman's drawing lots. Who ha Goral? This is the Goral. Haman thinks it's a poor, but really it's the which Goral? The Goral in the Chumash, where Hashem is governing the Goral in a very direct, very specific way. And it's not just a translation. It's not just a dictionary. If it was a dictionary, then one would have been enough. Why twice? Oh, twice is to teach us. It's not just a dictionary. There's a significance. There's a significance that it's the Goral, that this phrase in the Megillah captures the entire essence of Purim. Haman's dry mots. Haman thinks it's all Mikra, and in reality, it's the Goral being governed by Hashem, just like the Goralot and the Chumash are being directly governed by Hashem. So these are some additional points regarding the Yisod, that Purim is Yom Tov of Neis Nisr, and with this, we'll stop here.